There are three big problems with used vehicle appraisals. One, manually sifting through comp vehicles. Two, old book values and ghost comps. Three, no recon visibility. You can solve them all with AutoVision, now available from Reynolds and Reynolds. Learn more at reyrey.com/used cars. That's reyrey.com/used-cars.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to Daily Drive for Tuesday, May 7th, 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News in Detroit.
And I'm Callan Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, Fisker's Austria unit files for restructuring while Magna Steyr cuts 500 jobs. UAW members authorize a strike at a key Stellantis plant. And Lucid's cash burn rages on. Plus, Global Data's David Oakley joins the show to talk about the latest sales results and why affordability is still weighing on projections for the year.
It's not just the interest rates in general, it's, you know, how much are people actually paying, you know, on their monthly loans, and that seems to be even slightly creeping up.
Let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
Fisker's unit in Austria has filed for reorganization and court protection from creditors. The move follows the troubled electric vehicle maker's decision to cease production at contract assembler Magna Steyr in Graz, Austria. The filing is a rough equivalent of Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in the U.S., an action the company has said is possible if it can't find new investment. Meanwhile, Magna Steyr will lay off 500 employees at its contract manufacturing operation in Graz as production of key models, including the Fisker Ocean, is halted or comes to an end this year. Other models include the BMW 5 Series and the Jaguar E-Pace and I-Pace. Production of the BMW Z4 and Toyota Supra models, which share a platform, will end in 2026. Output of the combustion-powered Mercedes G-Class will continue and be joined by an electric variant. Magna Steyr, a unit of Canada's Magna International, has capacity to build 150,000 cars per year. In the final quarter of 2023, it built more than 21,000 vehicles, compared with 28,600 in the same period in 2022. The parent company said on Friday that it is facing lower than projected sales and earnings after its business with Fisker was idled.
Workers at Stellantis's Warren stamping plant in suburban Detroit have authorized a strike over health and safety grievances. Monday's vote came after the union said Stellantis hadn't resolved complaints related to ventilation fans, ergonomic matting, personal protective equipment, flooding, basement lighting and flooring, restrooms, oil leaks, and overall sanitation. The union did not disclose how many members voted, but the authorization received 72% support among those who did. It says negotiations continue. Warren Stamping supplies more than half a dozen Stellantis plants in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. The UAW says a work stoppage could have an especially big impact on Ram pickups, the Jeep Wrangler, and Wagoneer. Stellantis said that while the plant voted to authorize a strike, discussions are still ongoing and work continues at the plant. The automaker said it, quote, remains committed to providing a safe and healthy work environment for all employees and resolving this matter without a work stoppage.
Electric vehicle startup Lucid Motors reported a first quarter net loss of $685 million and reiterated its 2024 production guidance of just 9,000 vehicles. It says high interest rates and waning EV demand are weighing on growth. Lucid's net loss was an improvement over the $780 million loss in the first quarter of 2023. But the company's stock is down more than 10% in midday trading to $2.63. Revenue in the most recent quarter was $173 million, an improvement over the $149 million it reported a year earlier. Lucid said it ended the first quarter with cash and cash equivalents of $2.2 billion, compared with $1.4 billion in the fourth quarter of last year.
and a little-known self-driving startup landed more than $1 billion from three of the tech sector's biggest names. Wayve, spelled W-A-Y-V-E, says it has closed the Series C round with funding from SoftBank Group, NVIDIA, and Microsoft. It's a development that could mean investors are once again interested in the autonomous vehicle industry. Wayve's CEO and co-founder, Alex Kendall, says the fresh funds are a vote of confidence in the contrarian approach the company has taken to developing its software since its 2017 founding. Rather than rely on a rules-based system, Wayve favors a system in which artificial intelligence makes the key driving decisions without human rules. And those are today's headlines. Jamie, the UAW members at Stellantis Warring Stamping Plant have authorized a strike. How does this affect Stellantis in the short term and long term?
In the short term, they need to resolve this situation in Warren. This is a really critical plant that feeds into a lot of assembly plants that make important big revenue vehicles. Unless they feel like they have way too many Rams and Jeeps out on dealership lots, they're going to want to resolve this and not let it turn into a full-blown strike. Longer term, I think we've heard some talk, maybe some of the other plants have complaints or issues with health and safety matters. So this could come up at a few other places. And again, I would look to the company to try to resolve those rather than risk a work stoppage that could spread and really cause chaos throughout their whole manufacturing network.
Gotcha. Coming up, Global Data's David Oakley gives us the rundown on the latest sales results and whether the industry is still on track to top 16 million sales this year. That's next on Daily Drive.
Data is the backbone of your used vehicle department, but finding the right data and using it to build accurate comp sets can be difficult. How often do you find yourself making manual adjustments to pricing recommendations? Reynolds' newest inventory management solution, AutoVision, can help. Jose Mendoza, general manager at San Leandro Honda, explains how AutoVision sets his business apart.
Everybody's going on third-party vendor sites to see what they're priced at out there. Everybody's looking at auction data. Everybody's looking at transaction data if you can get it. So the only thing that really is going to make it different for you is what you're selling them at. So I think you have to weigh that a little bit heavier than you do everything else. It doesn't matter if the market says you can sell this car for $30,000 if the last three you've sold have been at 27. We have reports set up through our DMS, through Reynolds & Reynolds, and through AutoVision, which is what we use for our used cars. And we have reports set up in those. And it's something that I think is important to constantly be talking about and constantly be going over.
AutoVision can help you run your used vehicle department with precise comp sets, real-time inventory data, and reconditioning insights. Visit rayray.com/usedcars to find out more. That's rey.com/used-cars.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. The industry's 20-month stretch of sales gains has come to an end after a mixed bag of results from major automakers in April. But at least one forecaster says it's not yet time to worry about the trajectory of U.S. auto sales. David Oakley is Global Data's manager of automotive sales forecasts for the Americas. He joins me now from Texas to talk about the latest results. David Oakley, welcome to Daily Drive.
Hi, Jamie. Good to be here.
Good to have you. So the results are finally in for April. Sometimes people like to quote, I think it's T.S. Eliot, you know, April is the cruelest month. Was it a cruel month for us? What's your takeaway from April?
I wouldn't say it was a cruel month. I think it was an okay month. I don't think we didn't see it really a spectacular kind of result one way or the other. I think, you know, we're looking at a seasonally adjusted annualized rate of about 15.9 million units rounding up to, which is okay. It's decent considering our sort of post-pandemic environment. It's been pretty much in line with where we've been seeing those annualized rates over the last few months. I guess the one thing that may grab some people's attention is that the year-over-year sales were down about 3% when not adjusting for selling days. But we had one fewer selling day than in April of last year. So when you adjust for that, really sales were pretty much flat year over year, maybe a little bit of a very slight growth. So, you know, it was okay, but there's definitely a very mixed bag going on, very different performances across different OEMs, some doing quite well, others really struggling. And we've also obviously seen, we'll get into a few different factors, but we've seen a few.
A mixed bag overall, pretty flat month, but, you know, we saw, you know, big gains again from Toyota as they continue to get their manufacturing machine, global manufacturing system, you know, up and running. Seems like they're still recovering. And, as we come out of the pandemic, right, it's like trying to figure out where the normal levels are for things. And like everybody except Toyota and Honda really had already gotten their supply back and they're still kind of working their way back. But it seems like, you know, maybe some of the other automakers, maybe the ones that report quarterly rather than monthly, are really the ones that are holding back the market.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, we've seen, you know, a great deal of weakness from Stellantis recently, not that they're necessarily a quarterly one, but, you know, they were still down like 28% year over year in April, and they're not necessarily one that you would expect to be in that position. They've slipped kind of below Hyundai and Honda groups in terms of the sort of sales rankings. So they're really seeing a lot of weakness with the, you know, Ram trucks right now. We're obviously, they're looking at bringing in some facelifts and, you know, some new refreshes there on that side of things. But until that really hits the market, we're not really, they're really kind of affecting things. And like some of the premium brands as well also appear to be quite weak after having had quite a strong year in 2023, particularly at the end of the year. So some of the sort of German premiums seem to be a little bit on the weaker side, although we'll know more when they report their full sales at the end of the quarter. But definitely between that and with Tesla not maybe growing as strongly as they had been in the past, that is something which is kind of exposing premium just not quite being able to compensate. I know that there's some debate over whether Tesla should be in premium or not, but
We moved them out after last year because they cut their prices like so much, which, you know, of course, there's still a lot of cross shopping with BMW and Mercedes. I don't know if that's really what's holding them back or if it's more on the gas side of the business. Do you have any views on that?
I think it's just a combination of factors, really. I think Tesla, you know, is just starting to see the Model 3 has obviously been held back by the IRA changes. And, you know, we're seeing just the Model Y is still doing fine, but without there being much else really going on, Cybertruck's going to take a while to ramp up. You know, they're just kind of plateauing, and therefore, and then you've had a few other one-off issues with some of the, I know we had some port delays for, I think it was Porsche was wrapped up in that and amongst some others. So premium's just taken a few hits on a few different angles. But yeah, I think we'll know more, as I say, at the end of the quarter. But it looks like BMW and Mercedes, you know, they're just struggling through that electric transition a little bit as well. So yeah, I think they're still kind of working out how to navigate all of that at the moment.
Again, in sort of the, you know, is Tesla luxury? Is it premium or is it mainstream? Certainly Elon Musk has been talking a lot over the last year or two about interest rates being a real headwind. I don't know if that's, you know, we usually think of premium buyers as being sort of immune to a lot of the headwinds, but interest rates on a, you know, 50,000, 60,000 or more expensive vehicle can make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think, you know, whether it's for a premium or sort of a more mainstream vehicle, you know, interest rates are a big headwind to the market at the moment. And I think it's not just the interest rates, it's as in general, it's, you know, how much are people actually paying, you know, on their monthly loans. And that seems to be even slightly creeping up according to what I've been reading recently. Whereas, you know, obviously there've been a lot of expectations coming into the year that we were going to start to see monthly payments going down and interest rates being cut. And now we're talking about, you know, maybe only one or two rate cuts this year and not until September at the earliest. Obviously that changes week by week, depending on the latest data coming out. But I think that's one of the things that's kind of holding back the market from being at its sort of pre-pandemic levels and getting over that kind of 16 million unit level right now, is that Obviously, just people's payments are just way higher than what we had been used to seeing for a little while. So, yeah, not sure whether that necessarily affects premium more, but it's definitely an issue across the whole industry.
Yeah, without a doubt, it affects business buyers. It affects, you know, economy buyers and everybody. Have you adjusted your full year outlook any based on interest rates looking like they're going to stay higher longer?
Not at this point. I think we were fairly cautious anyway with the full year outlook. We're looking at about 16.1 million units for the full year. So a little bit of growth over last year, but nothing too spectacular. So I think, you know, obviously we'll keep an eye on it. And, you know, if we start to see continued weakness, then there may be some downside to that. But I think we don't want to overreact as forecasters to, you know, what's going on. I mean, just last week you had, you know, the jobs data came out, whereas previously people had been saying, well, you know, with inflation remaining high, you know, there's no chance of, you know, two rate cuts this year. It might be one at the most. And then the jobs data comes out a little bit weaker than expected. And then people are saying, well, maybe there will be two rate cuts. So it can all change. It can all turn around very quickly. But yeah, we still think there's probably enough potential for some growth. Obviously, we may need to see some movement on pricing, I think, in order to get to that 16 million unit mark and above, and more incentives. But things are definitely trending in that direction. So we'd expect to see some more in the coming months.
Yeah, we definitely heard a lot of talk coming into the year about automakers trying to offer, you know, more of their lower end models, more, I don't want to say decontented, but lower content models, lower, you know, lower trim levels into the market as a way to counter some of the affordability concerns. It seems like, I don't know if we've really seen a lot of that action yet, or if it's still in the plan to come.
I don't, from what I've been seeing, I haven't seen a lot of that. If anything, it seems like there's still a lot of kind of higher content, higher trim being pushed. Now, obviously, it's going to take some time to feed through. That pivot in strategy may be on its way, but just not quite here yet. But, you know, every time, you know, we're starting to see, you know, 2025 model year vehicles come out, and obviously you're going to see a little bit of an uplift on the pricing on those compared to 2024 model year. So, you know, every time you think that there may be, you know, some downward movement, there's always seems to be something which just kind of slightly counteracts that and keeps pricing a little bit higher. So, yeah, there's definitely still some more work to do there, I think, to get down to the kind of prices that people are going to be more comfortable paying.
You know, EVs, of course, are typically higher priced. It costs a lot more to make than gas-powered cars. But we've been hearing a lot more enthusiasm for hybrids in the market. Toyota had a big hybrid month. Ford had a big hybrid month. GM's talking about bringing back plug-in hybrids. How do you see that playing out in terms of strategy and overall affordability concerns?
Well, I think it is the natural kind of next step to get us towards a more electric future. But obviously there is, you know, a lot of still some hesitancy. And I think it depends to an extent whether you're talking about plug-in hybrids or just your kind of traditional hybrids. Obviously, Toyota has had a history of developing your traditional hybrids. And I think in many ways, if you're a consumer just looking for a new car, a Toyota, you know, you may not even realize that it's necessarily a hybrid. You may get to the showroom and be surprised by that. But I think, you know, in many ways, your driving habits aren't necessarily going to have to change that much. Obviously, a plug-in hybrid is a little bit of a different proposition. But yeah, I do think, you know, there is some scope for certain OEMs to increase their offering in that sense. But I still think plug-in hybrids, you know, there is an element of hesitancy, I think, amongst some consumers, at least, to move to that kind of sense in which they're going to have to start charging either at home or, you know, finding, potentially finding charging stations out and about on the road. But I definitely think, you know, we are going to see more of that. We already are seeing more plug-in hybrids. So it's definitely going to be something that continues to be a trend over the coming years.
Before I let you go, I want to make sure we at least touch on some of the fleet versus retail mix. You know, it was a little bit of a disappointing month, or at least a bit of a step back. But so much of that was the comparison of fleet sales to last year. And those are just so lumpy, right? You get a month where maybe a brand or a company has too much inventory and they're like, hey, let's sell 5,000 to, you know, Hertz or, you know, a rental car company, or let's, you know, work that fleet channel more. And maybe when they don't feel the pressure, they don't have to. And so it's a double-edged sword, but it seems like the consumer demand continues to be strong, which of course is part of why the Fed is reluctant to cut rates.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, Jamie, fleet is a very difficult thing to really pin down sometimes, and it can be very lumpy. I think what we saw in April was maybe not something to read too much into. I mean, we did have a strong comparison with April 2023. At that time, we were seeing really quite a large recovery in fleet sales after, you know, several years during the pandemic and the shortages of low sales. And then it started coming kind of roaring back last year. And now we've got a higher bar for fleet. So in terms of, I don't want to read too much into 1 month's results. And I think, you know, there's still a lot of scope for fleet to grow this year. I think definitely sort of rental companies and in some other sectors, there's definitely still a lot of fleet renewal to be done, I think. And I think that, you know, maybe that, you know, there have been some issues with particular rental companies, you know, looking to offload EVs, seeing some issues with that. I don't know whether that's maybe causing some hesitancy. Like you said, certain OEMs as well, you know, we saw some outsized kind of fleet sales from the likes of Nissan earlier in the year, kind of February, March, and then that seemed to ease off a little bit in April. I think maybe some of the 2023 kind of model year Rogues that they were selling, kind of they've probably maybe worked through some of that inventory now, and they have less of a pressing need perhaps to offload some of that. So there could be some one-off factors there with certain OEMs and certain, you know, even certain companies on the demand side. So I think overall, I'm not reading too much into that. I think there's still scope for fleet to grow as the year goes on, and, you know, hopefully contribute to a slightly stronger market overall.
All right. Well, we won't worry too much about 1 month in isolation, but we are heading into the spring selling season, looking forward to what the coming months bring us. And looking forward to gathering the insights from Global Data, as we always do. David Oakley, Manager of America's Sales Forecast for Global Data, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Jamie.
That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News executive producer Jake Neer, as well as our own Vince Bond Jr., Lawrence Iliff, and Pete Bigelow for their reporting for today's podcast. We also had reporting from Burkhard Rearing of our sibling publication, Automobile Volca. You can get the latest news on vehicle sales, Magna Steyr's financial troubles, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back tomorrow for a discussion of recent news in autonomous driving. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.